Got a question for you, Greg. Got a question before you start
yes,
here. Before
yes,
we start
yes,
to go through all the notes that we have for today's podcast, this is just you and me talking here. No one else is listening right now, by the way.
Okay.
How come you don't follow Sam on Twitter?
I don't follow Sam on Twitter because I have... There's only one thing that I've seen from Sam of value.
Our
on
podcast
Twitter,
every
which
day
is a link to our podcast.
You don't need you don't want Owen Sound Attack OHL updates. You don't want to hear about Demir Sharapzianov, their all-star defenseman,
like,
LA Kings property. No, you don't want to hear the
hear
updates from the Harry Lumley Bayshore Arena. No, you don't really.
I feel like there's already somebody in my life that could fill that void.
You asshole. You goof.
Without the necessity to have another.
All right,
why?
Fine.
People, why do people actually care about that? Does Sam actually care about that, or is that just something you observe?
Oh, man, he came in all long face, man. He's like, man, you believe Wish doesn't follow me on Twitter? Like, what's it gonna take? I told him, man, nude selfies.
Okay, come on now.
Oh, here we
go. Just mentioned it in passing. Just passing. Why don't you follow me, Wish? Come on.
You know what's funny about, and we talk about this on, of course, the 10th birthday or anniversary of the founding of Twitter.
Oh, is it?
When Twitter debuted. Yeah, it is. It's 10 years of Twitter.
Cool.
The interesting thing is, like, I'll have my feed open and, like, I'll see tweets from people that I have no effing idea how I ever subscribe to their Twitter feed.
Yeah.
But yet here they are.
You know what
I
did?
I try to backtrack it. I try to say to myself, what was the thing of value that this person contributed to my social media life that required me to hit subscribe? And like now they're just tweeting about Trump. Like now it's just like, we're going to build a bigger wall. And I'm just like, how did this person wind up in my sphere?
What I did when I first got on is my friend Lauren, when I worked at CBC Sports, when I was at Hockey Night. And she was the one. She was working in our web department. So the big mandate came out. Everybody at Hockey Night has to get on Twitter. I didn't know what it was. I kind of went along with it reluctantly and didn't understand it. And so I thought that everyone who followed you, you had to follow them back in order to read. Idiot. So I'm still to this day scrubbing because of it. I'm that guy who's got, oh, someone followed me. I have to follow them back for some reason that I never
amazing.
Thought about. Yeah. So I'm still to
that
this day. Every now and then someone, you know, pops up with something stupid on Twitter. I'm like, why am I following this guy / gal?
We're going to have a Twitter hockey retrospective on Puck Daddy today. But like,
oh, good.
Now that we're on the subject, 10 years in. Well, first off, do you remember when you got on? You were forced to get on by Sportsnet, right?
No. Hockey Night. This is before Sportsnet. This is when I was at CBC, when I was doing Hockey Night in Canada. It was right before I was going out west to do a, when I was doing Hockey Night radio. This must have been 2009.
Yeah.
Maybe 2008. 2008 or 2009. I could check. Hang on. I'll just go to my profile. Hang on. Wow, this is freaking fascinating. Remember since April 2009. Yeah, 2009.
Hmm. Right. I did, I had to have been 2009. Or was it 2008? Let me see here. Does it say that on my profile?
Yeah.
Shows you how much I know about having Twitter. I don't even know how to read my own bio.
Yeah.
Well, 2009. April 2009. April 2009. Yeah, and I've told the story before many times. Like, the first time I ever realized it was a thing to pay attention to was the double hat trick game where Crosby complained about there being too many hats on the ice and it took too long to clean them up. And then I went back, I tweeted it, I went back and it was retweeted like a billion times. I'm like, oh, people actually care about it. And it's a way to deliver news better, bigger and better. I split hockey Twitter into two things.
Mm-hmm.
I split it up into the actual NHL Twitter sphere in which you have people like the LA Kings that figured it out. Paul Bissonnette figured it out. Roberto Luongo that figured it out. And it's been, I think, on the positive side, a way for teams and players to either put out personality or sell themselves in a personable way that had never been available to them before.
Or snuff, you know what I mean? Like, or snuff out personality.
Well, I mean,
there's been a lot of people committing, you know, social suicide on their Twitters.
Yeah, Dan Ellis. Remember that?
Dan Ellis wasn't... I understand what he was saying, though. Like, I know Lambert went, you know, berserk on him.
So did I.
It
was,
did you go
was,
after him, too?
Ridiculous. Oh, it was ridiculous. I'm like a brain surgeon. I have a special set of skills. And then, you know, while he's made millions of dollars in this league, talking about how he's more concerned about money than ever before. Come on, really?
He was a three million dollar
contract for being a backup goaltender. Yeah, you're worried about the checkbook.
One man's ceiling is another man's floor. You complaining about the money that you make to a homeless person, you're like, that homeless person's like, well, who the hell does Greg Wyshynski think he is? Like, that's how hockey players talk, man. Like, you think they just shrug off things like escrow? No.
He somehow didn't realize that he was going to make the thousands of followers he had on Twitter feel like homeless people by virtue of his complaining. That's the point.
Oh, I never faulted him for speaking honestly about themselves, and that's honestly how a lot of hockey players feel. I think there's a real fear for a lot of these guys. A lot of these guys that are barely hanging on, even if we think it's $1 million, it's not $1 million when you factor in escrow and taxes as to what they're taking home. And I think there's a legitimate fear of, uh-oh, what happens when this stops? That's kind of how I read Dan Ellis. And how Twitter is this? We're arguing over something that happened how many years ago? You and me.
Like 2009, maybe 2010.
This is very Twitter of us right now.
Luongo and Bissonnette to me are the two players that more than anybody else code of this thing. And in Luongo's case, it was turning a player that had been very maligned in his career, not being able to name the contract, him versus the whole thing. And really becoming like the court jester of the NHL. That Twitter stuff with Luongo had as much to do with him becoming a beloved figure and a guy that you generally root for than anything else that happened in his career.
Yes, completely true. All of that. And the interesting thing now is, I was talking to some people over the weekend. I'm doing this OHL Cup final here today, which is a minor midget tournament, a showcase tournament in Toronto, all through all Ontario, but it's anchored in Toronto. And one of the big things that scouts, OHL GMs all keep coming back to is the one thing they always do is read the person's social media and advise the players on how to behave, i.e. how to make it as vanilla as possible.
Right.
Like, don't you think that, you know, everybody in Vancouver and the executive was cringing when all of a sudden Luongo discovered, hey, I can have a personality here? They're not used to that. Yeah. And what's the first thing they always throw out? The D word. Oh, it's a distraction. Oh, if he wasn't tweeting so much, he would have made that save. You know what happened.
To speak to your point, we've seen a lot of examples. Like Sagan, obviously, you know, stepped in it a few times. There have been a lot of guys that have sort of stepped in it too and had to dial it back. So we haven't seen it's taken a special kind of player to be able to utilize Twitter. Great example, Mike McKenna.
Hey, the goalie. Yeah. Hey, dude, you're going to have to call back, man. Your line is awful right now. You're like modulating all over the place. Why don't you just hang up and call back?
No, it's back now. It's ready now.
You sure? Why? What did you do? Here? You have a magic wand you waved over it?
No, the internet just gets better.
Okay.
The more you're on it.
Okay, do you put a Band-Aid on the internet and it's okay now? All right, a little topical cream.
Mike McKenna is a great example of the guy who gets it. He's been fantastic. But Bissonnette's the real interesting one to me because, like, not only is this a guy on the margins who became a celebrity through his social media stuff, but it's also a guy that has stepped in it multiple times. You remember it. He had to quit Twitter because when Kovalchuk's contract got canceled by the NHL, he said something along the lines of, like, how are you going to pay for those lap dances now? Back to the Soviet communists.
Yeah. It's a little snug.
Right.
I'm not going to say who the person is, but there is one significant minor league enforcer who believes that Bissonnette totally ripped off his identity on Twitter.
Oh, I did not know that.
I can't say. I cannot say on the air. First of all, not John Morasty.
Okay.
By the way, Steve Bussé, if you know John Morasty history, who used to tune Morasty up in the Quebec semi-pro league on the regular, won his first UFC fight over the weekend, being James Tahuna. Yeah, knockout punch in like 15 seconds. Anyway, more on that. No, but not John Morasty. And I'm not going to say who it is, but it's a pretty well-known AHL enforcer who still believes it.
Are you tell me off the air who that is. That's really interesting.
But maybe the thing about I'll tell everyone on Wednesday at Puck Talks Live. How about that?
At the Firkin on King.
There you go. Wednesday, 7
o'clock. Got to get to it. Yeah. 7 o'clock. Tickets available.
Quick little plug.
But the thing about Bissonnette, too, is that, like, you know, here's a guy who became famous through social media stuff and threw everything at the wall. There were people forget that, like, you know, he's kind of toned it down a little bit.
Yep.
But there was a time when the Biz Nasty thing was a sensation, when one of his bits was he would take pictures of the homeless guys he'd give money to and post them on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, that was part of the bit.
Yeah.
And he would talk about his Speedos, and he would drop panty soup references.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, yeah, he took it pretty hard on the chin from a lot of people for being misogynistic, and he's had to apologize for a number of things through the years. But there's no question that, like, in the 10 years of Twitter, no player has utilized it more to his advantage insofar as what he was without social media and what he is with social media than Paul Bissonnette.
Yep, totally. And what was the first question Maloney got when they acquired Bissonnette? Is he going to be allowed to keep Twitter? And Maloney's like, well, he'll be monitored and he'll... Right. Rah, rah, rah,
rah, rah. And then Maloney said no, and all of a sudden he was in Newfoundland.
But you know what? But here's an interesting thing about all of this, too, is that you're right. And Paul Bissonnette sort of represented the wild, wild west. But as much as we mock hockey players for being vanilla cake with mayonnaise frosting, and a lot of it really is boring, you know, whenever they have a microphone stuck in front of themselves, if you've ever been around a collection of them, if you've ever been at the gym with a bunch of them, if you've ever been in a room without microphones with them, or even just gone out and had a beer with a bunch of them, they are some of the funniest guys. If you ever watched Letterkenny, you know what I'm talking about. They are some of the funniest guys you will ever meet. Completely
Absolutely.
Different than what you get in the scrums, what you get in the one-on-ones,
Absolutely.
What you get in the very manicured interviews. They are nothing like that. Like, Slapshot, the dialogue for Slapshot was Ned Dowd, the tape recorder of the Johnstown Jets.
Right.
And then Nancy put it all into a screenplay.
Documentary.
It's hilarious. Right. It's hilarious. They're some of the funniest guys in the world. And I think Bissonnette was really the first to at least sort of peel it back a little bit to give you a little peek inside.
The other part of hockey Twitter, of course, is the hockey fan community on Twitter. And I've been thinking a lot about it lately. Like, listen, it is the place where we go. It's a marketplace of ideas. It's the place where a lot of, like, fancy stats and analytics were introduced to the masses
yes.
through the analysis of people like Jen LC and other people, you know, Dello and people like that. It is a place where you can talk trash. It is a place where you can make jokes. It's a place where you can connect with your favorite teams.
Hey, Sneakers.
And other fans of teams.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear Sneakers in the background squeaking her piggy. That's pretty good, too.
Got a good podcast here.
And then the other thing about it, though, is that it's an absolute cesspool. And it's not a place that's very welcoming to women. And it's not a place that's very welcoming to new fans in some ways because the same tests go on. But the more I think about it, though, Merrick, and I think over time we've identified a lot of things as Twitter problems and, you know, what can Twitter do to fix the world and how do we make sure that Twitter is responsible for the content on its site and yada, yada, yada. At the end of the day, though, it's just a reflection of fandom.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a reflection of the cheap seats. It's a reflection of a bar after a game.
Look, dude. Isn't
it, though?
Look, dude, here's what I keep coming back to. Now, I know there are a lot of people in my end of the business, be it, you know, television, radio, whatever, who don't take well to criticism on Twitter. I expect it. I expect to get it because I expect everybody to get it. And I always, hey, Sneakers, I always say to myself, if Twitter didn't exist, would those thoughts not exist? And the answer is no. Like, we're fooling ourselves if we think, like, you know, if you don't like, you know, analyst X, you know, and you say something on Twitter, does that analyst think that if Twitter doesn't exist, that that person wouldn't feel the same way? Of course they would.
No.
All now is they have an avenue. It's not as if all of a sudden, you know, hatred of certain analysts and hosts all of a sudden, you know, rose up with the birth of Twitter 10 years ago. No, they've always existed. Now, the uncomfortable part is you get to see the criticism. Where once upon a time, you know, the editor would hold back some of the mail you got because it was inflammatory, or you'd have someone sort of, you know, censoring the criticism of you'd be very sheltered from it at my end of the business. Now there's no shelter. Now there's no speed bump, and people are driving right through and going right at you. That's why I expect it. That's why I don't get very upset about Twitter insults, because I really expect for it to happen.
Right.
I can't understand how people can get really down when they get barraged by Twitter insults and Twitter criticism, because it wouldn't exist otherwise.
It's been interesting to see that timeline, especially for folks in the media, where when the blogs came along, it was people in the media being like, oh, wait, amateurs can criticize my work. And they're like, oh, wait, now I have to write a blog too. And then when Twitter came along, it was like, oh, wait a second, I've got to be on this thing and interact with the readership. And then they're like, and the readership can say horrible things about me. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to respond. And then it just became a big mess. Now we've taken the traditional media versus fans thing to the nth degree, where there are battles between the two and all this other stuff. And a lot of people on both sides of the equation embarrass themselves through the years on Twitter, I think, getting into these little tiffs here and there. But at the end of the day, just like with the blogs, it was an amazing check and balance. It was an amazing check and balance on traditional reporting. And in some cases, exposing guys that maybe didn't know their stuff, or maybe that were way behind the times, where they drop references to the Corsi Hockey League, for example.
That was a rough one.
That was a rough one.
The thing is, even if you don't like Steve, you have to, I guess, in some sense, and him and I are quite different people, but he really has dug in his heels, and even today, will not even warm to the idea.
Yeah. And that's fine. But overall, I think it's been a great way to deliver news in a pretty fast way.
Best wire service going, hands down.
But as we've said before, it's also a thing where shut up, Sneakers. It's also been a way to make news collection a little bit sloppier and bring standards down.
Well, Sneakers has some controversial opinions on Twitter that obviously you're trying to keep down. Where's the
Where's
the Sneakers Twitter account? We're going to have Mike Sullivan on, and Sneakers is going to be with the squeaky toy and barking the whole time.
Sneakers has an Instagram, lil.sneakers on Instagram.
Really, eh?
Yeah, it's very popular.
Who keeps that?
Not me. my pictures of that dog on that Instagram would be here's one of her ear way too close, and so on and so forth.
Look, here's some earwax. Check it out. Dog earwax.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, listen, yay Twitter. More than not, it's a wonderful place to exist online. It's great. And listen, I got to say, and I've said this before, man, people give me way too much credit and go way too easy on me on Twitter. I like it what some of my colleagues go through. Holy smokes. I got it easy. I really do.
And I love it. I thank everybody who follows me. It's not always hockey stuff. I know some of you follow me because it isn't always hockey stuff.
Food TV.
What?
Food TV.
Food TV, beer, everything. But I think at the end of the day, it's been a really good way to meet new people and the Thailand situation last week was a good example. I was able to put out there, hey, what do you guys know about Thailand? Was able to get some pretty cool, suggestions when we took our trip there. And it's always been good for that too. So I value the cool people I've met on Twitter, and the not cool people I've met on Twitter have probably been muted, so it doesn't matter what they say anymore anyway.
Here's an interesting one from Karen, our buddy Karen Douglas. I don't think MVSW would have gone on this long without Twitter. The interaction on here is key to the podcast. That's true, because we don't take calls. One, because we can't, and two, because calling radio makes me want to smash my head against the wall. But Twitter's great. Twitter's honestly, in radio, you never let the audience write your punchlines. On Twitter, the audience always has a better punchline than you.
And they lead the conversation, and there have been entire segments of the show in which it's just their punchlines that we reread, because that's a great way to fill an hour. Yeah, without question. And it's been fantastic again, when we do meetups and when we see people and everything else. It's a great way for people to come together, and we value everybody who ever hashtag it MVSW. You're all wonderful. Happy birthday, Twitter. Stop being so terrible to certain people. And thank you for being wonderful to others.
Just be nice.
That's right.
Just be nice.
All right, before we get to Sully, who's due at 1:30.
You think that's his nickname? His last name's Campbell. What are the odds that his nickname is Soupy?
What if his nickname is like Vans? What if his nickname is like it's like something weird. It's like Rutabaga Jones. What?
like Kyle Clifford, the Colonel.
There you go.
You got to peel it back.
All right. With that, ladies and gentlemen, let's start the show proper, shall we? In theory.
Then, as it must to all men, death came to
Merrick versus Wyszynski.
I'm going to lay down my burden.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
By the way, folks, you know, when there's a really bad situation or a negative situation in the world, the healthiest thing to do is treat it with humor.
Down by the riverside.
Greg Wyszynski of Yahoo Sports.
I've always said to people, I said, when my time comes, man, just have a party. Just do a good thing. Do it New Orleans style.
Lay down my food and shield. Down by the riverside. Down by the riverside.
Why don't I remember this one?
Sorry about all the chaos here in the Casa today. Vivian's up for spring break.
Yeah.
Sneakers seems to be in some sort of weird place where she's... I think part of the reason she's barking haphazardly is because we have a Roomba. You know what a Roomba is, right?
That American thing.
it is a robotic vacuum cleaner that looks like a giant hockey puck. Yeah,
oh,
we do.
Oh, no way. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Those are awesome. I thought maybe you left your special cookies out.
No. We set it out to work like overnight. And now I'm not quite sure she understands what that was. It's sure. Like some sort of an apparition in the house haunting it and cleaning things while she's asleep.
It's a Dalek following her around.
Dr. Exterminate.
For the day.
Puppy, you will be next time. So she's been really acting weird, but such is life. Great hockey this weekend. Oh. We'll talk about the Penguins in a second. The East is amazing right now. Like, the fact that the Rangers and Islanders are both in play, the fact that the Islanders have what amounts to, I think, a must win against the Flyers tonight.
Oh, that's a huge game at 7:30 tonight.
And little injuries here and there, man. Halak gets lost.
Halak's a baby.
Last
time we saw Grace was flopping for Phoenix.
Yep.
When they handed it to him. Oh, you'd hate to be an Islanders fan right now.
But also, Neuvirth Neuvirth is
They got Mason.
Yeah, but that when both of them have been healthy is when that goaltending's been at its best. And I would never say goaltending's been an issue for them this season. I heard NBC said that over the weekend, and it's just dumb. Congratulations on reading the box scores from 5 years ago in your coverage.
Oh.
But like when they've both been healthy, they've been at their best. And it's frustrating to see. Norbert was having a career year, and what are you left with? You're left with Mason carrying him down the stretch.
Go Mason.
I think he's up for the task.
Go Mason, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like the Philly story is great because, I mean, how long ago were we saying, like, okay, look at the East and the West. Maybe there's two teams in the West who are going to battle for that final wild card spot, but everything's wrapped up. It's just a matter of positioning now. At least there's one team that's made it interesting. It's made it real interesting, despite what happened on Saturday. And we'll get into that with Mike Sullivan in a sec.
Perron, by the way, week to week with an upper body injury for the Ducks.
Oh, that left
injured guys get injured. That's what you learn. Neuvirth, great season, always hurt. One slipped on a puck in warmups, got hurt.
Yeah.
Perron, awesome for stretches, always getting hurt. Like, it just,
I know.
Some guys, man.
Let's get to our guest,
some guys.
Let's get to our guest.
Joining us now, the head coach of the Surging Pittsburgh Penguins. Mike Sullivan joins us here on the Merrick vs. Wyszynski podcast. It's me, Greg. Jeff is over there. And congratulations on this run, sir. It's been wonderful to see the Penguins become the Penguins again.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. I think our guys are playing really hard right now. It's been a lot of fun to coach this group, and they've been enjoyable to watch here over the last little while.
You know, the two games on the weekend, to me, Mike, were fascinating in that I think we saw, at least with my eyeballs, I saw two different Pittsburgh Penguins team against Philadelphia. You weren't shy about clogging it up and slowing it down and messing it up a little bit. And then yesterday's game was just fly zone Pittsburgh Penguins. Like, it almost seems as if the Penguins are, I mean, when the Penguins were at the height of their powers, they could play you any game they wanted. I kind of get the feeling watching the two games this weekend that you're trying to get back to that.
Well, one of the things that I've tried to preach to our guys since I've got here is if we're going to be a team that's going to be competitive and that wants to contend, we have to be a team that can generate offense different ways. You know, and I think when you look at our roster, we have some real talented players that, through their instinctive play, you know they're going to create off the rush. And that's where their instincts take over. And I think, we try to quite honestly stay out of the way in those areas. And we allow our players the latitude to make those plays when the opportunities present themselves. But we also have to become a team that can generate offense through our puck pursuit and our down low play and our net traffic and that aspect of the game as well. And I think if we do that, we're more dangerous to play against. The other thing that we've tried to preach to our players is that, you know, the teams that have success have to have the willingness and the determination to defend. We've got to be a team that's hard to play against. We've got to be a team that's willing to defend when the time comes. And I think over the last month or so, I really think our guys have bought into that play away from the puck, and I think that's made us a more difficult team to play against.
Jim Rutherford said that you guys essentially went from being a slow team to a fast team. So how much of that is the addition of a Rust, a Daly, a Hagelin, and how much of that is systems and stylistically?
I think it's a combination of both. I think the players, obviously, when you look at our core players, they want to play a fast game. They're good skaters. They want to get the puck with speed through the neutral zone. And I think they have good instincts, so they see the ice well. And we can not only use our foot speed, but we can use team speed by advancing the puck and changing the point of attack quickly in order to create a competitive advantage. So that's the way I look at the strength of our core players. And so with some of the additions that Jim has made to our team, I think it's added to that speed factor that we're trying to create. So, you know, I think it's really important as an organization that we know who we are, we know what our identity is, and that's something that we talk about on a daily basis with our team. And we believe that our competitive advantage is our speed, and we have to try to use that to our advantage each and every night. You know, we've tried as a coaching staff to simplify the game a little bit from a system standpoint so that we can play a little bit faster through the neutral zone. But really, it's more for me, it's a mindset of trying to play a fast game and a north-south game so that we can take advantage of the strengths of our core guys.
Further to that, if I can dovetail with a question about leaving the zone, because it seems as if you're, and I don't know, I'm not behind the bench, but it seems as if you feel comfortable with players flying the zone a little bit early. Previous regime, not so much, pretty much more buttoned down, married to that D-to-D pass before you do anything out of the zone. Are you okay with some of your key faster players maybe leaving the zone a little bit early to start to generate that speed?
Well, what we do is we give our guys the latitude to stretch the ice. And, you know, that's one of the aspects of our game that I think allows us to play fast. Is if we and we give parameters to them on how to stretch the ice and who stretches the ice. So, mm-hmm. You know, certainly we don't want to be a team that flies by the seat of our pants and plays a high-risk game, but we want to be a team that plays a calculated game. And so if we see an opportunity where we can fly one player to try to pull the opponent's defenseman off the blue line and maybe open up some ice underneath for some of our players to, you know, to attack with possession and speed with that underneath ice, I think we can become more dangerous off the rush. So certainly that's something that's part of our team concept. We think it helps us play that speed game that we're trying to play.
All right, I got a theory about why you guys keep winning despite losing Evgeny Malkin, and here it is. This team has gone through so many catastrophic injuries to big-name players over the last 4 to 5 years. They just know how to do this. Like, you've got guys in this roster that just don't sweat it, don't waver, see a guy go down and know exactly what needs to be done for the slack to pick up. What do you think of that?
Well, I'm sure there's some truth to that. You know, this team has been through a lot of adversity over the years where key players have gone down, and obviously you learn through those experiences. I really believe it starts with our leadership in our room. I think it starts with Sid, our captain. And then it trickles down from there. For me, I don't think our players are looking for excuses. I think they're taking advantage and embracing the challenge and the opportunities that are presented. And listen, anytime you lose a guy that's as good as Geno Malkin, he's a difficult guy to replace. Our guys are well aware of that. But having said that, we still believe we have capable people within our dressing room, within our organization, that we can be a competitive team. And when somebody goes down with an injury, it provides opportunities for others to step up and play a more significant role. It provides opportunities for young players to establish themselves in the league. And as a coaching staff, we've tried to challenge our guys in that regard to look at this opportunity as a big challenge and embrace it. And if we do that, we feel as though we have capable people that can get the job done. And I think our guys, they have, to their credit, they've played extremely hard. I think we've got an enthusiastic group. We've got a nice mix of young players right now with our core veteran guys that provide the right kind of leadership for these guys. And they're playing hard. It's really been a pleasure to coach this group. And we're really enjoying the process right now.
Mike, before you took over, as you well know, it seemed as if Sidney Crosby wasn't getting the puck when he wanted it, maybe as often as he wanted it as well. How much of when you took over did you say to yourself and say to the team, when Sid wants the puck, just get him the puck?
I wish it was as simple as that. I can't really speak on behalf of what took place before I got here. But what I can tell you is what I've witnessed since I've been here, and that's a Sidney Crosby that is playing with all kinds of passion and determination. And I think when he's invested emotionally into the game, and this is something that I've talked with Sid on a number of occasions about, that just having coached against him over the years, when he's at his best, he's emotionally invested in what's going on out there. And when he's all in like that, I think he's one of the top players in the world, if not the top player in the world. And I think that's where, for me, the start of his turnaround or his resurgence, I guess, has taken place. It really is a credit to him on how hard he works and prepares every day. But he's all in right now. He's all in. He's determined to lead this team the right way, and he deserves a lot of credit for the success that this team's enjoyed.
And you mentioned the emotion, and that's a good point to pause on there. Like, where were their heads at when you walk into that room? And was there an opportunity to channel that frustration into something positive and maybe lead to this run you guys have been on?
Well, I think, when a coaching change is made in pro sports, it's usually a result of expectations aren't met. And those can be difficult circumstances for everybody to go to work in. And no one, I think, bears the burden of that more than the players themselves, because nobody wants to see somebody, one of their coaches, get fired. It's a hard business in that regard. We all have the utmost respect for how hard coaches and players work in this league. It's a very good league. And so when those circumstances take place, it can be a difficult environment for players to perform. I think the burden of responsibility can weigh on players. And, when I took this team over, one of the things that I asked myself was, how can I have the most immediate impact? And for me, what I came to the conclusion was to try to change the mindset a little bit so that they weren't so focused on the circumstances surrounding the team, and try to change that focus just on the process of getting better. Let's just come to the rink every day. Let's work on our games. Let's pay attention to detail. Let's practice hard. Let's develop good habits, and then let's go out and play. And if we can change the focus or tweak the focus just on the details of the hockey and not necessarily dwelling on the difficult circumstances surrounding the team and doing our best to block out the noise, if you will, that's surrounding the team, then I think we have a chance to turn this team around. And so that was our approach coming in. It took us a little while, but I think we're on the right track here. I think we're getting better each and every game. And, you know, this last few weeks here, I think our team has put a pretty consistent stretch of hockey together that, that for me gives us a chance to win on most nights.
You know, it seems as if, too, the moment you took over, the one thing that changed, and this is from talking to a couple of your players, was the nature of practice. And as you know, players crave structure, they crave accountability, and you know, they crave things like focus. And it's and the guys that I talked to right away, they said the practices are great, we know what we're trying to achieve, there seems to be a purpose, and everybody knows exactly what they're supposed to do. From the coach's point of view, what are you trying to achieve in practice?
Well, the one thing we do is we want to practice fast. I you know, I'm a strong believer that we are what we repeatedly do, and if we want to play a fast game, then we've got to train fast. So one of the staples of how we practice is we practice with pace. We practice with tempo. There isn't a lot of downtime. It's not a slowdown process. We're trying to train our group to play quick. And if we train that way, hopefully that will translate into the game situations and we'll play that way. You know, the toughest part of when we first took the team over was we played something like 6 games in 9 nights. It was difficult because there was not a lot of practice time to try to affect some change. And so that was one of the challenges that we faced moving forward. But now that, you know, we've had the team here for a few months now and try to establish some practice habits and practice, you know, staples of each and every day and what we're trying to accomplish and defining objectives each and every day when we go into practice, that's really the approach that we've taken. And I think our guys have certainly benefited from the tempo of the practice and just the pace of the practice. And I believe that that is translated into a faster game in the game situations.
Last one's for me, Mike. You were also an assistant coach for the 2016 USA World Cup of Hockey, which I know will be your World Cup of Hockey champion as a proud American. What are your thoughts on the jerseys, first of all, for Team USA?
What are my thoughts? Are you talking about the design? Do I like them?
Yeah, you like them? I mean, we've had beautiful designs for USA hockey jerseys all over in all the Olympics and all the international competitions. What did you think of these ones?
Sure, I like them. I like them, but so. I'm not a picky guy, you know. I think we have great colors. I think we have a great logo. I think no matter what design they pick, it's hard to pick a bad one because of the colors and the logo. So from what I saw so far with what they've come out with, I think they're fine.
And as far as what you do for this World Cup team, like, did you have input on the first group announced? And when do you have to start actually concerning yourself with the tournament?
We really haven't even gone down that path. You know, I've had one or two discussions with John Tortorella just regarding some of the players that were in consideration. But obviously they have a very capable management team there of a number of general managers and Torts himself that represents the coaching staff, I think have the biggest influence on the selection process as far as the players. They're difficult decisions. There's a lot of really good players out there. So, I know that our management team there is very qualified. They've got a real good handle on our players and what they're capable of. As far as how the coaching staff's going to work, we really haven't gone down that path at this point. I'm sure at some point moving forward, Torts will define roles and responsibilities and we'll all work together to do the best that we can.
And Mike, last one here, and we thank you for your time. Behind the bench, you are very calm. You are very focused. But when the coach sees TJ Oshie get 3 or 4 freebies on Sidney Crosby, what goes through your mind?
For me, it's just hockey. You know, I got asked that question last night after the game, and one of the things that we've talked about with our team is our identity, what's our competitive advantage, and how do we not get deterred or distracted from playing our game, regardless of the tactics that other teams are going to take to try to get us off our game. And I think that's an important aspect moving forward for us to have success. And every team's going to have a little bit of a different identity. Some teams are big and strong and play a heavy game and are physical, and they're going to try to bang us, and they're going to try to, you know, they're going to try to play physical against us to slow us down. And if that's their identity and that's what they are, that's fine. We can't get caught up playing their game. We've got to make sure we play ours. And I think it takes that unwavering focus and that unwavering discipline to make sure that we don't get caught up in somebody else's game, so that we give ourselves the best chance to get the result that we're looking for. And I thought last night was a perfect example. I was proud of our guys at how hard they played and the focus that they maintained through the process. That Washington team is a very good hockey team. They play a physical style of play. Mm-hmm. And what I liked about our group is our response, or our pushback, was through our speed and our puck pursuit and the play and the game between the whistles, not after the whistles. And that's the most important element of our game, and making sure that we don't get distracted. And I think that's the biggest takeaway. And we've had a number of games over the last couple of weeks that have tested our resolve or our resilience in that regard. And I think that they're great learning experiences for our guys. I think it provides more evidence that if we maintain that necessary focus and we play our game and not get caught up in somebody else's, then we get a chance to win regardless of who we play against.
My quick follow-up, before I let you go, any update on Dumoulin? We saw him hit pretty hard last night by Ovechkin.
I have not spoke to our training staff today, but it's my understanding that it's a day-to-day injury.
Okay, perfect.
Mike, life is so much more exciting and interesting when the Penguins are good.
True.
So thank you for that. And we'll hope to catch up with you during the playoffs, man.
Okay, guys, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
There he goes. A National Hockey League coach chasing home ice advantage in a playoff spot just gave us 20 minutes on a podcast, Jeff Merrick.
Right? It's great. And thanks to the Pittsburgh Penguins for that. And this is not to diminish, you know, Mike Sullivan coming on. This is fantastic. It's a lot easier for people to come on when they're winning.
Right.
And anyone who's ever worked as a producer in radio trying to chase guests know who the people that are GMs and coaches who will not come on the show based on how their team is doing.
I literally emailed them the second that game ended last night.
Okay, Sam emailed them as soon as the second the game was over. But of course, yeah. But listen, in Pittsburgh, to Pittsburgh's credit, they've never been that team. And there's one that I'm thinking of out west in the Pacific, you need APB to find the general manager when they're losing six. But the minute they string four together, all of a sudden he does the circuit.
They dialed Sam back with their collective hockey boner pressing the buttons after that win last night.
But it was great weekend for Pittsburgh and a fun weekend. And I think you're bang on. Like, honestly, I've said this before on this show. When Crosby's at his powers, it's a better NHL. And when Pittsburgh's playing great with all those superstars on it, it's always a better league. And there's a few. I didn't know that Brian Dumoulin, like, beginning of the year, I'm thinking to myself, can Brian Dumoulin play in this league? He may be one of the most improved NHLers this season of anybody. And Kunackle flies out there on that third line
Rust
with Colin Rust.
Rust, Hagelin, Kunackle, Daly, like the whole thing. And like,
Daly's been
good. Sullivan poo-pooed it, man. But like, you listen. To me, Rutherford is zero sum. He's made some decisions that were dumb and bad, and then made some decisions to rectify them.
Hang on.
Okay?
In his defense,
so he zeroes out.
Some, not all his decision. I know the GM takes the battle for it, but there's a battle happening up above Jim Rutherford.
But his name's on it. I mean,
yes,
his name's on
totally
it. So you gotta take it at face, right?
Yep.
But Sullivan and that, you know, sometimes you just need to tweak the system. And like we said, when Johnston was fired, get him playing a style that gets him excited to come to the rink every day. And he has. It's not completely fire wagon because they do play D a little bit.
They do fly the zone, though. They do fly the zone.
They stretch the ice, man.
They fly the zone.
Let's be honest, they
fly the zone. It's fun. Listen, I'm not knocking it, but that's one of their strengths. Like, get speed. Just underneath the blue line. Start picking it up. And if you get to leave early, that's fine. Go.
They fly the zone, but it's not completely irresponsible. It's not like Fleury's all of a sudden facing 50 shots a night.
Oh, no. This isn't Pavel Bure. I'm not coming back into my own zone. I'm just doing circles in neutral zone. No, I'm not talking about that.
Yeah, it's Mike Green defense. It's having the speed to, or Eric Carlson defense to upgrade the reference. It's having the defense to cover up for your mistakes. Your speed, rather.
You want to hear a funny, you want to hear a funny Eric Carlson story?
Please.
So I'm doing the, there's a number of teams in this. You won't be able to isolate who the player is. But I'm doing the OHL Cup tonight, and so it's all minor midget hockey players. So I'll have to fill out for all the scouts and all the GMs of the OHL, all these like questionnaires. And, of course, one of the questions is always, who's your favorite NHLer? And one defenseman's parents, who I talked to on the weekend, said, well, his favorite player is Eric Carlson, but he doesn't want to put that on there because he might think that scouts won't think that as a defenseman he won't play defense in his own zone. So he doesn't want to put Eric Carlson on his questionnaire.
That's hilarious.
That funny?
Right.
It's great.
It's like when I would, and no disrespect to him because I love the guy, but like it's like when I would be hiring for the newspaper and someone would put Bill Simmons as the reference. Like, I think Simmons is a brilliant writer, but when you're trying to hire a guy to do the inverted pyramid on a field hockey story on a Friday night, you don't necessarily need someone dropping Karate Kid references. You know, it's like, it's gonna have some connotation who you say your muses are. Interesting stat from NBC, the NHL and NBC's own Liam McHugh, who tweeted last night that when Mike Sullivan took over on December 12th, Crosby was tied for 79th in scoring, and now he's in third place amongst NHL scorers. Yep. I mean, that's a pretty significant turnaround for Sid.
A few things. They're getting him the puck. They're playing to the strength, which is whatever the strength of Crosby is will be the strength of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Helps you get the net mining so you can do that. He may be the most forgotten man out of all of this. Marc-Andre Fleury is turning in another excellent season.
I mean, the guy who kept them alive in the
right?
when they couldn't put the puck in the ocean?
Right? Yeah, that guy. And the practices are that much better. Like a guy like Crosby, like the hockey machine, needs to come to practice every day and, you know, do something, have a direction with the practice and have everybody else do it too. And then he just plays Pied Piper and everybody sort of goes along. So no wonder he's skating with a smile now. Like we would see, I remember there's one play that I saw early on this year where I said to myself, man, Crosby is out of it. I can't remember what game it was. He's going down the right side. And he approaches the defenseman. He's not going to take it wide, but he curls. And instead of making a move or getting it deep, he throws it into traffic. And I said to myself, that is like so not a Crosby play. Like he's just, his brain is somewhere else right now. Like that is just completely not a Crosby deal, throwing it in traffic like that. No way.
Congratulations to Sportsnet on the ratings for this Saturday, by the way, because it's going to be, the playoffs begin on Saturday. You've got Pittsburgh at Detroit in a just an enormous game for both of them. That's on ginormous, Saturday. Yeah. And then you also have a game I cannot wait for, which is the Minnesota-Colorado one-on-one for the last time this season showdown is Saturday night as well in Colorado.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Love it.
Oh, yeah.
Nice job by the Blackhawks getting a point out of that game last night, by the way, because the Blackhawks, they're not in trouble, but they could be. Mm-hmm. Right now, as far as the wild card goes, which again, I mean, like, who the hell cares where you finish? 9 games left, 6 up on the Preds, and they get a point out of that Minnesota game last night. And the Preds have LA at home tonight, which should be an interesting one. And it's, you know, like, listen, here's the risk you run if you're the Blackhawks and you finish in the top wild card, okay? The risk you run is that Dallas and St. Louis don't close the deal. And you get LA in the first round.
Oh my God.
Which is a possibility.
Oh my God. You imagine? Oh.
I know. Oh. I know. Dark suit series.
Can you come up and do some math on the chalkboard? Nope. Nope. I'll take the F.
But that the mathematically, the possibility would be there if Nashville finished in the 3 and the Kings pummel all of the weaker teams in the Pacific down the stretch.
Yeah.
That you could get Chicago and L.A. in the first round, potentially.
I love it, but I don't want Chicago-L.A. in the first round.
No, I know. You don't want to give it away.
You don't want to
give away that match on Raw. You want to save that match
for
the pay-per-view.
Yeah, the main event goes on last. You don't put the main event on first. You know what I always think about when I think about L.A. and Chicago? It's going to sound weird. That's that conference final where Bob Cole turned into the Bob Cole from 25 years ago in one of the best called series we've heard in how many years? It was like all of a sudden Bob Cole was Bob at the height of his powers. Oh my God. Of course,
Anaheim
the hockey
and San Jose. Yeah, of course. Anaheim and San Jose look locked into the 2-3. Perron out for a few weeks, looks like. And then the Joe Thornton Hart Trophy campaign is beginning in earnest. I'm seeing more than a few references now to Jumbo maybe getting some Hart love this year. He's not going to win it, but he could get maybe a nomination. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I haven't sort of peeled back on Thornton because I've always taken him for granted and just figured everyone's missing the boat on Joe Thornton because they keep saying, like Gilbert Perreault, he's got no cups. And I always say to myself, any team in the NHL would be blessed to have the possession monster that Joe Thornton is. Thanks.
Of the best passers in the last 20 years, he's top five.
Number one.
Better than, well, I'm including Oates and Crosby in that, though.
So am I. Aren't you? Oh, I think Joe Thornton's the best of the generation.
You say that, man. You're going to really piss off Zach Parise by telling him his personal coach, Adam Oates, who's not the best passer of all time.
Look, he's the best passer of this generation, and he's still great. He's still fantastic. And you know what's going to be great about Joe Thornton?
What's that?
How good is his Hall of Fame speech going to be? The dude.
It's going to be fantastic.
The dude when he gets in the Hall of Fame. Like, he's done. Like, it's wrapped up. He's going to the Hall of Fame.
Sure. Oh, of course.
Cup or no cup. That speech is going to be spectacular.
Do you mean at the end of the speech when he unzips?
And Tomas Hertl. Your four-goal performance inspired me once upon a time.
Tomas Hertl, you never got four from me, but I am going fourth into the Hall of Fame. Zip, flop.
Zip.
We don't get parity this year because there's really only the Flyers and the Wild that are actually alive in the playoff race. But we have crazy seeding situations down the stretch. We just mentioned the Blackhawks over in the East, Florida, Tampa, Boston separated by 3 points. The Rangers, Pittsburgh Islanders, Schmoz, Detroit hanging on with Philly hard charging. Philly, don't forget, has themselves 2 more games with the Penguins. But that's 8 points. That's a pretty healthy spread. And then, of course, Philly tonight. Closing at the island as well.
Philly's got 2 more games up on Detroit.
That's true too.
Right.
And they play each other on April 6th, by the way. In Detroit.
So good.
Oh, it's great. So Mrazek, by the way, is back on the ice today. So mayhaps it's not going to be the Jimmy Howard show down the stretch anymore. So we'll see. It's going to be so much fun. It's playoff time, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By the way, real quick, it was my birthday yesterday. Thanks for
happy belated.
Wonderful Greg. Things. Good. Thank you. That wasn't me begging for any kind
What'd
of
you
from you.
What'd you do?
Ruby took me to Medieval Times dinner and tournament.
Oh, I did see that tweet. Sorry.
God, it was so wonderful. It was the best. I forgot how much fun it is.
Did you get bundled?
What does get bundled mean?
Hammered. Drunk.
Oh, no. I had to drive home because my kid was there.
Oh, okay.
Well, I had a few slushy beverages, but nothing to the point. I mean, it is a straight shot back to New York, but I forgot how much fun it is because all you do is have slushy beverages and eat chicken with your hands and cheer on predetermined matches involving knights hitting each other with swords and maces.
I've only been to Medieval Times once, and it wasn't to see Medieval Times. It was Medieval Times rented out one night for indie wrestling. In Toronto.
No kidding, really?
Yeah, man. Rhino was there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Rhino headlined. I'm trying to think of who else was there.
The most amazing
ECW
thing.
Guys.
I think Medieval Times falls somewhere in between professional wrestling and professional sports in the sense that I do believe it's all predetermined.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, the guy next to me was fired up. Come on, Black and White Knight. Like, come on, baby.
Whipping chicken legs at the competitors.
Oh, God. It was amazing. He not only was he into it, and not only was he screaming, but he paid the extra money to upgrade from the made-in-China little streamer that you get at the door to the full-fledged black and white battle flag that you wave during the competition.
That's awesome. Oh, you know what I know? Oh, we also, I guess it's trending now on Twitter, so we've all seen it now. Someone tweaked into it on Twitter. Again, thank you, Twitter, and thank you for all the follows. You seen the Bodie McBoatface stuff?
Bodie McBoatface.
It's the best.
It's fantastic. Tell the people real quick.
Bodie McBoatface. Okay, so there's a, how many million dollars? Like, how many million, Sammy? Sammy knows. Like, 200 million? $200 million pound. Oh, Jesus. 200 million pound boat, okay? It was being funded by the UK government for polar research. And they've put out to the good people online to vote for what they want the boat to be called. And overwhelmingly, in a John Scott fashion, Bodie McBoatface, which if Bodie McBoatface wins, will be emblazoned on the side of this 200-pound ship. Bodie McBoatface.
Yeah.
UK government just shaking their head at this. And. If you are one of those people who look down your nose at the John Scott vote and thought it was an embarrassment and thought it was a sham and were angered by it and had the nerve to insult people who partook in it, if you even raise a sideways snicker or gentle, polite chuckle at this, then you, sir or madam, are a horrible hypocrite. If you called anyone a nerd blogger, you're not allowed to laugh at the story. If you said this was an embarrassment, you are not allowed to laugh at the story. If you said that people that vote for this thing are not real fans of vessels, you're not allowed to vote for this thing.
That's right.
If you did any of these things, if you insulted anyone who partook in John Scott, you are not allowed to delight in or retweet any part of the joyousness that is Bodie McBoatface. Hashtag John Scott.
You know, it's people like you that ruin aquatic travel for the rest of us.
Yeah, it's probably just nerd boat bloggers that have put this together. People that really don't care about boating.
Wednesday night, I will be in Toronto with Jeff Merrick for a live MVSW at Furkin on King. You should all buy tickets and attend.
Do it. It's going to be fun.
If you check out our Twitter feeds and also the Puck Talks Live Twitter feed, there are codes you can use get a little discount action.
Yep.
And thank you to Mike Sullivan. Thank you to the Penguins for giving us Mike Sullivan. Thank you to Sam for getting us the Penguins to give us Mike Sullivan.
We returned him in one piece. He's fine.
Thank you to my shitty internet. Thank you to Baby Sneakers. Thank you to Vivian. Thank you to Ruby, who I think all of those people you heard from in the first half of the show.
Yeah,
and then things got real professional, and
did Ruby remove sneakers, take them out for a walk?
What do you mean by remove?
Well, not remove like ice, but I'm talking like take sneakers out of the room. So all of a sudden, sneakers got real quiet.
Yeah, I mean, I was really hoping that when we had the coach of an NHL team on, it would go like this. So, coach, what'd you think about Sidney Crosby when Sidney Crosby, you know, because he was 79th in scoring, and then he. Yeah, no, that's what I was hoping it wouldn't sound like. Oh, hey, Sneaks. I just summoned the dog by doing that, by the way.
Well, then, by the way, Puck Talks Live, Wednesday, 7 o'clock, as you mentioned, Furkin on King. Me and your boy Wish, James Myrtle will be there. Paul Rosen will be there. Chris Johnston, Christina Rutherford, who may have the coolest voice you have ever heard. Like, honestly, if you come for one thing, come to hear Christina Rutherford speak.
She's also the best.
She is A, fantastic, B, has the coolest voice, and C, her women's hockey league team, before he passed away, was the Wade Belaks. So cool. Brian Hayes from TSN there as well, too. Brian Dixon, Joe Pack.
If Myrtle and Johnson would be down to being the contestants on Game Show.
That'd be good. That'd be great.
But it would guarantee that maybe the contestants could name more than, like, two Calder winners.
Hang on. Is James allowed to even go on with us?
Oh, shit. That's right.
Because he's played the TSN card before. And I love James, too. You love James. We all love James. We tried to get him on.
Yes.
Everyone's asked, oh, can you get Myrtle on the podcast? We would love to get Myrtle on the podcast. Mm-hmm. But he's a...
Say hi to TSN Jamie regular. Hurdle, a tall drink of water, who writes for the Globe and Mail.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us again. Back tomorrow. Bye.